Wednesday afternoon, time for our bi-weekly conversation with MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez. The winds are whipping up once again today, batting down the hatches. Shoreline erosion. We've got a real problem out along the lakeshore.
It's a very blustery day here. The winds are beginning to kick up at this hour, and we have flood warnings up. We've got the high wind advisory. And this just kind of adds to one of our stories this week here at MIBiz by my co-worker, Sydney Smith, took a look at the erosion problems that are now occurring here along the Lake Michigan shoreline. You know, earlier this year, we talked about the high water levels and some of the problems those are causing. Well, that's now evolved into erosion, and we've got some houses along the lakeshore precariously dangling over the edge. There could be some folks here real soon to lose some of their second homes or primary residences along the Lake Michigan shoreline. And what we talked about in the story this week by Sydney is, first, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says Lake Michigan nearly 3 feet above where it was this last fall. And over the next 5 months, it's projected to equal or exceed the all-time record highs that was set 32 years ago, 1986, 1987. And that's when all five of the Great Lakes were well above their average levels. And we had a lot of problems then with erosion and homes right along the lakeshore. And what this is causing is for folks who want that lakeshore home, want that lakefront home, and the companies that are building lakefront homes, that's creating a whole lot of uncertainty on whether to go ahead, where to build, how to build. It's a problem for that particular segment of the housing market. And it's certainly a problem for folks who, for perhaps generations, have had that lakefront home in their family. And now they're watching that water level literally eat away at that family's possession.
Number of issues here. You have current homeowners there trying to protect their properties, and I know that the state is trying to help out those homeowners, and then you have property values.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. What does that mean for a property value when you now here over the last year or so has had this threat to literally arise? It's now a threat to your property as well as eating away at your property when this groundwater coming through this ground and then the waves from the lake are literally eating away at your property. How does that affect your value? And the other issue is, how do you protect your home if you have a lakefront home? The state, the regulatory agencies have been a little, they've been trying to work with homeowners for some temporary ways to put sandbags or whatever to stabilize that soil and that sand to protect the property. So it's an issue. It's a costly issue for these folks who have those properties. It's not going away anytime soon.
And this is not the first time this has happened. I would imagine that there are some lessons that have been learned in the past.
Well, you'd like to think so. The lakes rise and the lakes fall. Not too long ago, we were talking about low lake levels. And I remember when I first moved here back in, 1987, it was an issue with high water. And you had some homes south of town here in Grand Haven that did fall into the lake. And then over the course of the years, the lake waters go down and you have low lake levels. And that was causing other problems, particularly for those businesses, the marinas and others, and for the shipping industry. So it's a problem. I remember some of my reporting many years ago. It's a 30-year cycle of Great Lakes water levels. They rise, they fall.
Well, we'll stick with problems. And there's a big one here, and that is in the medical industry and healthcare, physician burnout.
Be good to your doctors, folks. This is a problem. And, you know, it's not as if healthcare didn't have enough problems. This has been a problem for a while, and it's getting worse. And some data comes to us from the National Academy of Medicine, which spent some time taking a look at physician burnout. They're just burned out as a physician, as well as young physicians going through medical residency. Just to give you a couple of numbers, the National Academy of Medicine says that about 35 to 40% of practicing physicians and nurses now experience some symptoms of burnout. The rate's higher, 45% to 60% among medical students and residents. We already have a shortage of physicians in this country, and it's only going to get worse as older physicians retire, new physicians come in. If there's a burnout going on by, more than a third of them that are causing physicians to leave the profession earlier than they wanted to, that's only going to worsen the physician shortage. And there is an associate dean at the Michigan State University College of Human Medicine here in Grand Rapids, Wanda Lipscomb, who was part of this group at the National Academy of Medicine that took a look at this problem. She's really hoping that now that this report is out, it's kind of a call to action among the medical profession that we need to start addressing this.
So what's one of the big problems that these physicians are dealing with?
talking to some of the chief medical officers and heads of the medical groups at Mercy Health and Metro Health here in town, as well as Wanda there at Michigan State. Part of it's culture, especially among young physicians. The older physicians tell the young physicians, you know, when I was your age, I worked all these hours. When I was a resident, I did this, I did this. They tell me that there's a tendency in the profession, you're dedicated to the job, and they don't have that home-family work-life balance. Dr. Pai at Metro Health told me about when he was growing up, his dad was a physician, and how when they went on vacation, they would take two cars because inevitably his father's pager would go off. Dad would take off to tend to the patient. They say really a lot of this should start with culture within the profession and somehow finding that work-life balance among physicians to reduce this burnout rate and hopefully prevent this doctor shortage from worsening in America.
Well, how do you fix that part of it? Because that seems to be the root of the issue. Do we have enough physicians to help create a new culture?
That's the broader issue. There are more physicians. Medical schools, we'll just look at the Michigan example. Over the last decade, the medical schools have grown. We've seen new medical schools up in central Michigan and western Michigan. And over at Oakland University in Detroit, that's bringing out more medical residents, more professionals into the profession. Part of it is where they go to work, where they don't go to work, how do they work? There's also other pressures, the technology, payment models. There's far, far more demands today from health insurers for data. But how do you fix that problem? Like any workplace, what kind of culture do you want to create? But it's a necessary fix because if you're burning out physicians and that kind of that professional culture and that attitude and the thinking within is contributing to that, that's a factor that's got to be addressed. There are no easy answers to this, if that's what you're asking. When I talk to the folks at Metro Health and Mercy Health, they're looking at it, and it is a serious problem. Make no mistake, there are no easy answers to fix this within the medical profession.
And there is the opioid crisis, which MIBiz has been focusing on in recent weeks. In this installment, you're looking at how Blue Cross is piloting change in its insurance model for addiction treatment.
Yeah, this is the part three of a three-part series we've done over the last few issues, just kind of looking at this crisis in Michigan and some of what's being done about it. And in the case of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, it's trying to kind of create a new model on how insurance companies pay for treatment. Addiction has typically been treated as an acute care situation. It's kind of a one-time, you have a problem, you go in, detox, rehab, you go out. Blue Cross Blue Shield is arguing, and there's a lot of folks who make this assertion within that area of medicine, that treatment for addiction should be as a chronic illness. Addiction is a chronic illness that needs continued prolonged treatment. So Blue Cross Blue Shield since early 2018 has had this pilot program going. It's called CLIMB, and they're working with Pine Rest Christian Mental Health Services here in Grand Rapids and Henry Ford Health System over in Detroit, where when they have a Blue Cross member who has an addiction, and in this case, they're working with the folks who become addicted to opioids, they get them into treatment, detox in an inpatient unit, come out, and then some intensive outpatient care over a prolonged period of a couple of years or more. They're paying for the medically assisted treatment on an outpatient basis. They're paying for the counselors. They're taking a look at other issues. This is called the social determinants of health. It's a big thing in healthcare. What contributed to that individual's lifestyle or what they have going on at home or at work that contributed to their addiction? So they bring in other counselors and social workers, care managers. All this, again, is in recognition of treating addiction as a chronic illness that requires prolonged care and treatment. So Blue Cross Blue Shield, by early next year, hopes to have some full-year data that it will report upstairs to the brass in perhaps by the spring or late winter, a decision on whether this is a permanent model to put into place.
MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Patrick, and to everybody else, and we'll talk to you again.